Thank you for downloading the PR Week, PR Week's weekly podcast. For more podcasts as well as breaking news, visit prweek.com.
Hello and welcome to the PR Week, PR Week's regular weekly roundup of everything that matters in the worlds of PR and communications. My name's Steve Barrett. I'm the editorial director of PR Week, going to guide you through the show, 30, 35 minutes of broadcast magic. That's what we aim to produce here every week, isn't it, Frank Washcook, my co-host?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm ready to produce some magic myself.
Good. And our fantastic guest this week, Liz Kaplow, who's founder and CEO of Kaplow Communications. Liz, welcome to the show. How
thank
are you?
Thank you very much. And thank you for welcoming all of us that way. Who needs a second cup of coffee when
exactly.
we have you with that?
We're ready to go. Yeah. We are cooking on gas. So it's going to be a good show. A very sad start to the show when we get into the news topics because Harold Burson passed away last Friday. Very sad news, but a great celebration of Harold and his life. We did a lot of content about him and extraordinary reaction from our readership and from people in the industry. So we'll chat about Harold. Maggie Fitzpatrick, she's leaving Exelon. We'll find out about that. Another of those fun social media stories that Frank loves so much, Uber and the walking buddy. And we'll find out about Edelman. It's hired a new public affairs lead from Pfizer. And America's most trusted brands. A new survey was out this week, so we'll find out about that. But let's start with you, Liz.
Yes.
Kaplow Communications. You launched that in 1991.
Yes.
So actually, you're coming up next year for a big milestone,
aren't
you? 30 years in the business.
Right? Incredible.
Tell us about that. Yeah. How's the industry changed? And tell us about the story of launching the firm.
Yeah. Oh, well, gosh, it's a long time ago. But, you know, from the day I started in the business, I was thrilled by the idea that you could tell a client's story and that you would be able to earn a relationship with a third-party endorsement of the media to do that. And that idea of storytelling, which you know, was that idea was early at that time. Now, sort of everybody talks about what we do is storytelling. That's what thrilled me, and that's what really got me to start the agency. I had a good history at DeVries with Madeline DeVries, and then in 91, decided to give it a go, and it was in large part because truly I was looking for, in those days, the flexibility that didn't exist within agency life. It was before a lot of what technology and flexibility allows women and moms to do today. So in truth, I was a little bit of an accidental entrepreneur, loved the idea of having that freedom. But then what I saw was that it really worked to be able to, you know, get out there and build a business off of the idea, and started on 44th Street in 1991. And we've just been having a great time ever since.
How did that feel, you know, making that jump? Because it's very scary, isn't it?
Yes.
Maybe it was a lifestyle choice as well, but still a scary thing to
very
do.
Very much so.
Tell us about that feeling when you sort of first put up the shingle and putting it out there.
It's scary. And, you know, I didn't have any entrepreneurs in my family. My father was sort of a 9-to-5 business person, textile person. My mom is an artist and she was at home. I looked around for other people who were doing that, and really there weren't very many. But, you know, it was one of those moments where you kind of, I was led by a passion around it and sort of a need. Somebody called me and said, you know, could you give this a go? And I said, I'll give it a try. And I kind of got in there saying yes before no to each new task that I had to learn and I had to do, or finding somebody, you know, who could do that along with me. And little by little, that's how it began to take off. I think it's what gets in the way for entrepreneurs is a lot of overthinking. But sometimes when you're forced into a situation a bit or impassioned by it, that's the thing that fuels you. And so what I would say to people sometimes is, you know, don't overthink it. Sometimes you kind of get in there and start doing, and
just
then
do it.
Just do it, and then you're led by a lot of the gratification that comes out of it.
I think you're right. I think once you've made that step and then you look back, you're thinking, what was I ever worried about? You know,
yeah.
Obviously it's running your own thing is a bit, you know, it's different, but it's just that first step, isn't it? Yeah. Were there people who inspired you or helped you at the time?
Oh, yes.
In the industry, who were your mentors?
Well, I would say Madeline DeVries was a big mentor. When I started, there was only 8 people. It was, you know, so different. She was encouraging. She was a tough boss to have, but she, when I called her and told her I want to do this, she did encourage me. And I think so many people, you know, along the way in the industry, tons of people I've met through all different parts of the communications industry, women and men, have been very, very encouraging along the way.
Tell us a little bit about Madeline, because obviously the DeVries name continues on with DeVries Global. It's part of Interpublic Group now. Tell us a little bit about her.
Well, Madeline was super smart, scrappy. What I think I learned from her most was the absolute importance of doing quality work, and that when you get overwhelmed by client service, trying to deal with difficult situations, going back to doing good work is something that wins most of the time. And we do have to think about culture and all those things that I don't think she was as focused on in those times, and frankly that I wasn't as much when I first started. But I did get that idea from her. Also, quality clients with long-term relationships, and that's something we really pride ourselves in, just relationships as a whole, whether it's with the media, whether it's with new people coming into the fold, influencers, and being our clients' biggest cheerleaders, you know, and sometimes finding the person inside the brand who maybe hasn't gotten as much, you know, exposure, and getting excited about them and for them. And that really fueled me watching her. She was also a terrific salesperson.
Yeah.
When you launched, who was your first client?
So our first client was a brand called Monet Jewelers. And it was very big during the time, and it was helped by Madonna in the late 80s when everybody was, you know, wearing all that costume jewelry on hats and belts and whatnot.
I remember it well.
I had worked on Monet when I was with Madeline, and then, you know, they weren't there anymore, and Linda Borella, who was the director, came to me and said, you know, will you work with us? I had started sort of freelancing. It wasn't even called that then. And I called Madeline. You know, I felt it was important, even though the brand wasn't even with them anymore. And, you know, she said, you should take it. And, you know, it's that kind of generosity of spirit that I remember. So that's how it started. But she was getting me to do all kinds of things. She would say, you know, can you write the script? Can you be a voice over here? I just said yes to everything. And so I think that spirit is following and should follow the industry today in some of these new areas that, you know, we're not sure of all of the time. Is that our turf? You know, should we be in this area? And what I'm so proud of at the team at Caplow is that we are trying these things. And I think as an industry, we need to continue with that spirit.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it's all based in earned media, and the world has kind of come toward earned media, hasn't it? You know, as paid and peso, paid earned, shared earned, and PR people are doing all of those things now, again, to your point. So tell us a bit more about the modern Caplow. You've had long, you know, you've had relationships, you've been associated with clients like Skype and Target, I think.
Yes,
and,
sure.
eBay.
Yes.
Tell us about some of the big clients you're working with today, and also how it's changed, and also maybe what stayed the same, you know, some of the principles that have stayed
the same. Well, I think actually more has stayed the same than any of us sometimes realize. You know, the idea of earned is every bit as important. Everything about that has changed in terms of the way that we get our messages out there, and the fact that we're 24/7, and that we have many, many more stakeholders than we ever did before, right? We have not just the journalists, the traditional media that where we all started in this industry, but now, you know, there's this very interesting interchange between the brand as publisher, the digital journalist, you know, the influencer who, you know, in their own right, the citizen as involved, you know, in the day-to-day, needing that response in real time. So that makes life interesting, and that's why it's, I think, more important than ever to have a very open mindset and to, you know, seize these things as an opportunity rather than a challenge, because it isn't easy to keep up with it all. In terms of Caplow and, you know, what we're up to, again, going back to the idea of trying to always work with best-in-class brands and keeping that notion up, being afraid not to take something on unless it's somebody we can really help. And it's a brand that we really believe is doing great things and that we can help to spread the word about that. And so we are very known for, you know, beauty and home, et cetera. But the consumer technology kind of overlay, which we've also been very known for, is interesting and I think makes life interesting for our other clients.
Yeah, for sure. Now, running an agency, over the years, you're going to have ups and downs.
Yes.
You're going to go through financial crisis, recessions, booms, and every agency owner is familiar with that. So how have you ridden those out?
Yeah.
And how do you sort of hunker down in the tougher
yeah.
times and make sure you don't get ahead of yourself in the good times?
Yes.
What's your advice
so
on
I think
that?
You have to stay very realistic about what you do best, with also that idea for trying new things. And I think that when difficulties happen, which they do for every firm all the time, honestly, you know, and I don't mean to sound cliche, but being positive and leading with looking for opportunity versus where, you know, the challenges are really helps the team ride the momentum. And, you know, progress, I think, honestly, comes in part from momentum. And we don't fully always realize that. So if we start getting ourselves into a dark hole, it could be a little harder to get out of it. But I think every time we've seen that something hasn't gone right, we kind of spend the time we need to you know, be realistic about it. And I'm not trying to make light of this. There are real difficulties that every firm has, including ours. But what's very important is then regrouping, looking for an opportunity, and also looking at how you can take the experience you've had, let's say, with a brand and turn it into something else, you know, wonderful and exciting that the team can get excited about working
on. Yeah, and you've got to go again, haven't you? You've got to keep that energy
up year
after year.
You've got to keep it going.
Yeah.
I'm telling you also, look
what
you're doing with PR Week, guys. You're doing a good job with that.
No, the team is going again, and we've started this year, this decade, doing that.
Exactly.
To close, what are you seeing for this new decade,
the
roaring 20s, whatever
yeah.
we're going to call it? It's going to be a big one for you. You've got your 30th anniversary
yes.
coming up. What's the big thing,
yeah.
trends
yeah.
we should be looking out for over
Look,
the next 12
I
months?
Think I'm very optimistic, not just talking myself into it. I think that there is a lot of good for us because we always have been a somewhat scrappy industry. We're fast. We can keep up, and our measurement is getting that much better so that we can really be taken seriously as we have been by the likes of the C-suite. And that's an exciting thing to continue to happen. And I think as measurement and data become more ubiquitous and pulled in, not just at the beginning when we're setting up programs, but to be used on an ongoing basis as we continue to test and try and work closely with our clients, it's only going to bring us closer to the CEO and the CMO. I also think that heritage brands, it's very interesting because everybody wants to be about the challenger brand. Heritage brands, if we look deep inside them, they have a story. Many of them have a purpose. It hasn't always been told. I think that startups are going to continue to need our help because many times they've grown and by conversion so rapidly, but they need to build brand awareness. Sometimes they've grown and they're doing amazing in sales, but nobody even knows their name. So we have that great opportunity. And then finally, what I would say to you that I think is the most important, and it's not a trend, hopefully it is here to stick, is this idea of brand purpose, and that it's not a nice to have, but that it becomes over time, with the help of PR practitioners, something that is intrinsic to every brand.
Yeah, I think you're right there. We've seen that with our purpose, PR Decoded Purpose Principles Conference, the Purpose Awards. It's becoming a big thing in business, and it'll be on the agenda next week in Davos and moving
Fantastic.
Forward. So yeah,
no,
good
you've
stuff.
Done a great job with that.
Thank you. Well, so you've done a great job too. So we're looking forward to seeing what you do
how
you celebrate your 30th anniversary.
Terrific.
Thanks, Liz, for telling us more about the firm, and we'll get your thoughts on some of the news stories. Frank, you know, we've got to start with, we got a phone call about 10:30 last Friday morning. We kind of knew this was going to come one day, and so it wasn't a surprise, but it was still a shock, you know, when something like
yeah.
this, and it was the the news that Harold Burson had passed away. Such a legend in the industry and good friend to PR Week and so many people. It just provoked this outpouring, didn't it, of good, celebration of Harold's life. He was 98 years old, and he meant a lot to a lot of people in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely did. I mean, everybody knows a lot of the landmark dates in his life, and really a tremendous life even outside of working in PR and founding the agency, just, reporting on the Nuremberg trials. It was just a historic, such a historic event, and he played a role in reporting on that, and then founding Burson Marsteller in 1953. Just a tremendous life he had. When I think of Harold, and Harold was, one of these people that he was almost on a one name basis with everybody. And then if you said Harold, people knew who you were talking about.
Yeah.
But when I think about him, I think about, when we used to do the NASDAQ event before the PR Week Awards every year. And he was, I guess, about 90 at the time and going to the office every day, but not in a formal role. And just watching him chat with people who were executives at these major companies, and many of whom had worked in politics in the years before that, and just how in the know he was about just like the current state of gossip of, who in the White House got along with who and who didn't and things like that. And he was, even at age 90, he was absolutely just tuned into these things. And it was really interesting to watch.
He was super connected. He still went into work three days a week. And I remember we reported about him moving back to Memphis last July, I think it was. And he still said, we've got an BCW, Burson Conan Wolf's got an office there, so it'll be convenient. Yeah. It's not as big as New York, but I'll still be able to go in, And I think people loved that opportunity to spend time with him, whether you were an intern, whether you were a young PR pro, or whether you were a CEO of a top five agency or a big client. Everybody, Harold's treated everybody the same, and that was a great...
I did my internship there, actually.
That's right. I remember you saying that. So you were an intern at Burson Marsteller.
I was told, this is the very early 80s. I was told that is the only place to go. And, it's interesting what you say about treating people, on a level. Even as an intern, I could feel that they were investing in my trying to get it right. I remember that my boss had me sit in a room with her so that I could practice. Well, I wasn't practicing. I was actually calling the media, and she would critique me after each call. But it was an investment in her time to do that. She also handed me cash at the end of every week, $20, and she would say, no one should work for free. Get yourself a cup of coffee. But it was a friendly, warm culture, and I think it was really ahead of his time in that respect.
He, I also remember interviewing him years ago, and he had that office in New York with the old radio in it. And the radio was kind of just a sight to see in and of itself. But he wasn't imperious in any way. He was a very approachable guy. I remember him joking that he came from Tennessee, and he said something to the effect of he fell off a watermelon truck or something like that. But he was very mild mannered in a great way, and very approachable and very easy to talk to.
Yeah, he was, and he was still doing client work, into his 90s. And what you said, Liz, is true about we can, as journalists ourselves, we know we get calls from young PR interns and professionals, and you can tell they're not being overseen in that. They're just giving a list and off you go. And you're like, this is just really not, this is wasting everyone's time. Yeah. So that culture is so important. Some of the things, he's heavily associated with certain clients. He was instrumental in J&J's response to the Tylenol sort of crisis, one of the major classic sort of case studies for crisis response. But he was also well ahead of his time, I think, on a number of issues. For a start, Bill Marsteller, who he set up with, was an ad person. So he was doing integration from the start, right, from the 50s. So he was way ahead of that curve. He was way ahead on the global curve, going into China, going into Europe at a time when other PR firms just weren't there. And that, I think that what people have said is he had this engaging personality that he could resonate with anyone around the world because he just had that human touch. And he was ahead of the game on diversity. Always he was, we honored him as our diversity champion early in our diversity awards. So he was, there's so many things where he was ahead of the game. And if you read his book, 1997, I think it's called The Business of Persuasion. There's some such great, talking about what you said earlier, Liz, that some of these lessons from, they're just as relevant now.
Yeah,
okay,
it
might be different platforms and channels and ways of doing things, but some of the lessons are just as relevant. He was ahead of the game on purpose. He was always saying that he regretted this constant focus on quarterly financial results and shareholder value at the expense of doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So he was ahead on that. So it was very, very. It was great to celebrate his life,
yes,
but obviously very sad that he passed away one month short of his 99th birthday. And we will look out for memorial services both in Mississippi and I believe there's something being arranged in New York as well. But great tributes to a great man, a great person, and a great PR professional. So rest in peace, Harold, for sure. Moving on to other subjects, Frank. Maggie Fitzpatrick, a well-known high-level PR professional. She's leaving Exelon, I believe, sometime in the summer.
Yeah, she is going to depart the company in June. She's going to be replaced by Judy Rader, who is going to report up to William Van Hoen, who's the EVP and Chief Strategy Officer at Exelon. Exelon, of course, is a big energy provider. Maggie's one of the most well-known people in the corporate side. And so we will be looking to see where she's going next. She dropped a very cryptic hint when she talked to Diana Bradley this week and said she started her career in public service and her ambition was always to round off her career in service of others. So we will see what that means in a couple months, I hope, when Maggie lands someplace else.
Yeah, we shall. And I must admit that 4 years ago, before the last election, Maggie did a similar thing. So I don't know if there's any, I have no knowledge on this, but I don't know whether she's going to be involved in something in the run-up to the election in November, maybe supporting one candidate or another. I don't know anything about that, but I know she did that last time. So, good luck to all involved on that front. Frank, one of your favorite topics, social media stories, Uber and Walking Buddy. What's that all about?
I love this story, and clearly our readers do too by the numbers, but Walking Buddy is this hoax that started on Twitter when a user created, and you know, the Uber screen when you're looking at how much, you know, the pool costs versus the Uber X and the fancier one.
Are you a pool guy, Frank?
No, I try to avoid the pool.
Yes, I think
So
that doesn't surprise me. I don't know why, but
avoid people.
No. But I'm the same, by the way.
Well, you know, it takes so much more time.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't want to hang out with randos, do you?
Really? No. People. Right. So, Walking Buddy was listed as a third option on this hoax of a screen, and it was great, and it caught on, and it, you know, in the first few days, it got like 50,000 retweets and 180,000 likes. So Walking Buddy, maybe it's a future business opportunity for Uber. What I love about it, though, is that it was listed as one way of getting to LaGuardia for $7.50. It would take, of course, a couple hours. But, you know, if you've ever had to go through that taxi line at LaGuardia now with the construction, you've probably been tempted to walk.
That's true, although it wouldn't be the most scenic of walks out to LaGuardia, would it?
But,
what I liked about it was Uber kind of leaned into it, didn't they?
Well, it took them a little while, but they eventually kind of responded, you know, got to get those steps in, which is, you know, sometimes brands don't have a sense of humor about these things. So good for them.
Yeah. So maybe we'll all be getting a Walking Buddy when we next go to the airport. That's one thing that has changed, Liz, isn't it? That obviously social media and digital and internet has totally changed communication, cell phones. What's your reflection on that and how that's changed things?
Yeah. I mean, it is a given. And I think, you know, I like this case because it shows this is what bubbled up in real time. And the brand had a choice to make and they kind of went with it. And I think those are the critical moments, right? When something comes up and when it's to be taken seriously, when it requires an authentic apology, whatever you have to do as a brand, you generally need to do something, but it really should be thoughtful. Take a minute, take a breath, and decide that. I think it's great. I think it's an opportunity. I think that it makes brands better. Makes brands better. You have to be on your game, and you have to be great with your products and services. And I think it's affecting, in a good way, brands. And the people are needing to be faster to respond to their customers.
Yeah.
CEOs, you know, are needing to have more integrity, and that's trickling down. So in some ways, look, it's There are challenges, of course, many. But it, overall, when you look at business and the output, I think that there's some good that's, that can come out of it.
Yeah, you can access your consumers in so many different ways and so much more quickly and also globally. So, yeah, and I think the playbook isn't written yet, which is why those stories get such such a lot of traffic on PR Week. And that's why we do a lot of them and why they're so popular. So, yeah, interesting stuff. Let's tell tell us about Edelman. Frank, always interesting to see what the biggest PR firm in the world's doing. They've hired a high-profile person for their public affairs lead role.
Yes, they have brought somebody over from Pfizer. And what I think is really interesting about this is that they've made this hire, and what they're doing is building out what they see as a standalone public affairs shop. And, you know, when Richard Edelman talked to our reporter Thomas Moore the other day, he mentioned that, you know, that taking on firms that are more known for public affairs and international work and things like that, you know, like APCO, and he mentioned BCW. So it's going to be interesting to see how this shop functions and how much of a standalone unit it is. It's a unique take on this, and clearly they've targeted this area for growth, and so it's something we're definitely going to check in on in a couple months.
Will Kirsty be based in DC then?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they've had a few sort of political types working for them, haven't
right.
they, over the years, and they haven't always stayed. Some of them we've had on the podcast, Steve Schmidt,
yes,
being one of them. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Kirsty does there and how she plays out that role. And you know, when you started, Liz, I mean, maybe Burson was and Hill and Knowlton were probably the biggest firms in the world. Now it's Edelman and Weber. You know, how much do those big players show leadership that is important in the industry, especially leaders like Richard Edelman and Harold in his day?
Yeah, it's important. They do. And these kinds of moves, I think, do show the rest of the industry. And it's good. You know, when we need that, we need to look to, you know, these bigger firms and these leaders. And the fact that they're willing to take risks and try new things and forge ahead, I think is important for the industry.
Yeah, very much so. All right, let's finish on brands. That's what we write about and talk about on a regular basis. A new survey by Morning Consult came out this week. America's most trusted brands. I mean, there's quite a few of those surveys. What did this one say, and what caught your eye particularly, Frank?
Yeah, it was a surprise winner on this, and according to our friends at Morning Consult, the most trusted brand in the U.S. is the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I was...
Actually, a brand very heavily associated with Harold Burson.
That's right.
He was working with them. That was one of the brands he still worked with, I believe.
Now, when you split it down by age group, the Postal Service is the most trusted brand overall, of course, but it's also the top spot for Gen X and baby boomers, whereas Google is the most trusted brand for, you know, millennials and Gen Z. So that makes sense when you think about it that way. And overall, you have Amazon in second place as the most trusted brand, which I think also makes sense when you consider their reach and, you know, some connection with the Postal Service there. But also Google, PayPal, and the Weather Channel in the top five.
Wow. So the
quite
top.
A mix.
Yeah. But I guess they're all brands we use on a sort of daily or weekly basis, aren't they? And if you think about the USPS, it's an incredible logistical feat that you can just still put something in a mailbox and it will reach its destination within two or three days, wherever you're talking about, not only in the US, but around the world.
It's
so I kind of like the fact that brand is still heavily...
A heritage brand.
Yeah, exactly.
And didn't reliability come up as very important? So maybe that weighed into it too.
And survey respondents, many of them said, quote, they've never had a bad experience with the U.S. Postal Service. Well, so that, you know.
Not sure I'd go that far.
Yeah.
Weather Channel's interesting because we're all obsessed with the daily weather, aren't we, about do we carry the umbrella, what are we going to wear, et cetera, et cetera. So that having that access to that information on our app
and with Weather Channel, it's interesting in that you think of them primarily as an app and not as the actual cable channel, which, you know.
Yeah, well, that's been a change as well, but it's the same brand. It's just evolved, hasn't it? And okay, interesting stuff. stuff. Liz, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to find out more about what's going on at Caplow, and congrats on your continued success there.
Thank you.
Frank, thank you very much, as always. I'll be in Davos next week, so Frank will be hosting the show. And actually, we've got our own survey with Morning Consult coming out on Tuesday about purpose and brand purpose. So look out for that one, and look out for all our content from Switzerland, the World Economic Forum, and the Snowy Slopes. But also a couple of other things to remember. We've got our PR Week Global Awards. They're out for entries at the moment. You've got until the end of January, the 30th of January, to get your entries in there. Whether they are global work, truly global multi-regional work, or regional work, i.e. in Latin America or in Asia or in the Middle East or in Europe. So there's different elements to that awards program. It's becoming very, very popular. It's one of our biggest events now, and the gala ceremony will be in London on May the 19th. So do check that out. You can find the links from our website and from our breakfast briefings. The Brand Film Awards is our big tie-up with Campaign, our sister brand that covers the advertising and creative industries. Still the only festival devoted entirely to brand films. So you have until next Wednesday, the 22nd, to get your submissions in. Again, there's a late deadline to the 29th. So do put your films into that. And we're going to have a gala screening at the Paley Media Centre on the 7th of May, which is always a great night. And there'll be a workshop during the day where we'll dig into that branded content and brand films. We're launching a new product next week, Frank, aren't we? PR Week Dashboard. Tell us about that.
Right now, Dashboard is going to be your go-to newsletter and page for everything. Where you have questions about products and tools that cover everything from analytics to social media monitoring to all that good stuff. So we're going to be a bit of a guide for you on that, because we've heard from talking to people there's a lot of confusion about that.
Yeah, there is. Great. There is. Communications technology. And you can get that content for free, but you've got to register. So again, check out our breakfast briefing or the website to register to get on that newsletter, and look out for the first one. And we put out our call for information this week for the Agency Business Report. Port Liz. Hope Caplow's going to be in this year. So we're calling for revenues and headcounts and other information for the agency reports, the biggest survey of the PR agency sector. So do make sure you're a part of that. It's abr@prweek.com, I believe, the address to register if you haven't already got your email. But that's all we got time for. We'll see you next time on the PR Week.